This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Hey, you know it's Taz and Moose.
You know it's Taz and Moose. Hey. Coming to you live, Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Mike, Pete, across the way, Bogus, double duty this morning. In for Taz, sitting in with me. Got updates as well as we take it right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. 6 Pacific here on CBS Sports Radio, Sirius at XM 206. Make sure to download the app each and every download the podcast on the app each and every day. Apple Podcast and radio.com. And we appreciate you doing that. Coming up in about 20, 25 minutes from now, we're going to talk to Bogus and myself. We're going to talk to Sean Landetta, run around the National Football League. So look forward to that conversation. But let's get to the three.
It is now time for the three. We get you caught up on the three biggest headlines of the day with Taz and the Moose. Number one.
Bears dominate defense, help defeat the Rams 15-6.
Yeah, and in today's day age of the NFL, it's almost like a marvel. I mean, what the Jaguars did last week against the Indianapolis Colts, winning that game 6-0. I mean, that's like seeing a solar eclipse. And then you get a game last night in cold Chicago with the frost on the field at Soldier Field as the Bears outlast the Los Angeles Rams 15-6. And, you know, Todd Gurley only getting 14 touches, 11 rushes, 3 catches coming out of the backfield makes little to no sense. I thought Sean McVay's game plan going in as it played out, Bogus, and we mentioned it earlier on, I hated it. I really did. I thought it was an awful game plan. I think, and McVay took the blame after the game, and rightfully so. Didn't make any sort of an adjustment as the game went along. Goff threw 4 interceptions. Clearly did not look comfortable throwing the football in the cold weather. And you and I had the conversation about Chicago. It'd be interesting to see what a defense like that could do against one of the upper echelon offenses. And last night, they dominated.
I didn't think that was possible. And it's not a knock on the Bears, which I just thought the Rams were that good and that varied and that dangerous and that creative that they would have found a way. Even if the Bears gave them their toughest test of the season, they still would have found their way to, like, somewhere between 17 to 24 points. And I thought that would have been good enough to beat the Bears last night. I never saw a complete smothering coming, but that's what we got. And part of me says, you know, do it again, but they could do it again because, I mean, they're just locked in right now from top to bottom on all three levels. If they don't get you down as the quarterback, they make you make a bad throw, and one of those DBs is there to pick it off and do some damage with it once they do.
Yeah, you're not wrong about that. Let's hear from McVay after the game and after the Rams' loss.
Consistently, over and over, I continually put our players in bad spots. Certainly a humbling night, but it's one that you get a chance to look at yourself critically, find a way to get better, move forward accordingly, and that's exactly what we're going to do. That's all I know how to do.
Yeah, how about Matt Nagy after his Bears win?
We gave the game ball to the city and to the fans, and that's what it's all about. This is all about us and doing this thing together. Our players appreciate it. It was absolutely electrifying from the start to the finish. I mean, it was just powerful.
Listen, I love football, and I can appreciate all kinds of brands of football. I can appreciate a defensive struggle. I can appreciate teams that go on up and down the field and offense and galore and great plays from the quarterback, running back, wide receiver. But I think we've seen 2 superlative defensive performances this year. And I know the conditions played a role last night. It wasn't snowing and wind, but there was cold, and Goff did not look comfortable. But the Bears' performance last night against the Rams and the Cowboys' performance at home against the New Orleans Saints were 2 superlative defensive performances. And I do find it refreshing, Andrew, with the new rules, what you can't do defensively. I find it refreshing that there's still a place when you put the right talent on the field for teams to play, give you a dominant defensive performance.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the most impressive thing and the most confusing thing or unexpected thing, like you just said, is that no dumb rule that's relatively new to the NFL somehow hamstrung the Bears' pursuit of this effort last night.
Yeah.
There was no silly roughing the passer call.
No.
Or no questionable, you know, pass interference, nothing like that that gave the Rams a chunk of yards or kept the drive going that led to points. They played relatively cleanly. I'm trying to think. I don't even remember that many disputes. Like, you know, where was that flag? That should have been this. I mean, they just came after Jared Goff. He was never, ever comfortable. As you said, they kind of pre-spooked Sean McVay away from the run. Then when they did run it, they confirmed his suspicions. So he just abandoned Todd Gurley. And the 44 passes from Goff to the 14 touches from Gurley, as you pointed out, hour number one, is just not going to compute. There's got to be a way with all of that talent, with all of those smarts, to get Todd Gurley the ball to make, do some damage, and it never happened.
No, never happened, and the Rams head on a flight back home to L.A.
Number two.
Wild finishes across the NFL on Sunday.
Yeah, it really was an amazing Sunday. And we haven't had a Sunday like this really all season long.
Yeah, it has to be the best Sunday this season.
It really has to be. You know, let's start our games. We'll get into all of them here quickly. But games that we have not touched upon as of yet. How about Sam Darnold's return for the Jets up in Buffalo against the Bills? And leading the Jets to two touchdown scoring drives in the fourth quarter, including the game-winning score late. They go for it on fourth and goal. McGuire with the touchdown run as the Jets celebrate, and they celebrated on the field, off the field, in the locker room. Darnold continues to show himself when healthy on the field, and he was not healthy yesterday, coming back from that foot sprain, but leading that team on a game-winning touchdown drive. Beautiful pass to Robbie Anderson to put him in a goal-to-go situation. Able to finish it. Right call by Bowles to go for it on fourth and goal, and they win it 27-23.
Both New York teams are in similar situations here where if you want to be soulless and heartless, you want them both to lose. They have the best possible draft possibility. But on one hand, you get Darnold on the road, as you said, in the cold, game-winning drive, late fourth quarter. That, for him to be the quarterback that you want him to be and the why you drafted him where you did back in the spring, he needs games like yesterday. So you almost like want to apologize for winning, but the win is going to do you better than maybe one or two spots in the draft when we get to next spring. And the Giants in the same way too. I mean, you mentioned Saquon Barkley / Eli Manning back in hour number one. I still think the Giants are going to regret not finding another quarterback already to replace Eli Manning. But man, is Saquon Barkley good. And man, are the Giants still alive and well for the postseason. Get me to those playoffs,
Moose. Yeah, I mean, they are.
Your Redskins dead in the water.
No, I mean, they are.
Get out of here.
Well, they're awful.
Don't even bother showing up the rest of the way.
Listen, you can, whatever you say is not going to hurt me. They've hurt me already. So it doesn't matter. How about the Carolina Panthers? They've lost five in a row after a 26-20 loss in Cleveland against the Browns. Ron Rivera might get fired or could continue. I mean, he's probably, I think they might be looking for a change down in Carolina. Sore shoulder and all, Cam Newton throws for 265 yards, did get picked off. Baker Mayfield continues to impress for the Cleveland Browns.
The throw to Jarvis Landry for the touchdown is insane. They're more creative. They're 3-2 since firing Hugh Jackson. They've got five wins altogether, and they're technically not done yet in the they're not making the playoffs, just like the Giants aren't in the NFC. But I mean, they're still
technically alive.
They're alive. It's December, and they're playing games that matter to them, which is saying an awful lot about that franchise. And you know, Baker's proving to be the right pick, no doubt, and getting rid of Hugh, like we all thought, was certainly the right decision as well.
The Packers are still alive. First game for Joe Philbin. They beat the Atlanta Falcons, who are helpless this year, 34-20. But Philbin set a little history using his first two challenges in the first minute and 34 seconds of this game.
Not just using them, losing them.
Yes.
In 83 seconds.
In 83 seconds. Think about that. Minute 23.
I tried to yesterday, and I don't know. The first one bothers me more than the second one. I mean,
Oh, they're just bad.
But
Philbin's not a head coach.
In his return to head coaching.
In his return to head coaching.
83 seconds in, he's out of challenges.
And he knew the Packers would respond after the McCarthy firing, and they did just that. How about Kansas City? We mentioned it closing out last hour, knocking off the Baltimore Ravens 27-24 in overtime. Give the Ravens a lot of credit. I mean, they've had some very, very tough losses this year. Yesterday being another one in which the Kansas City Chiefs tie this game up late on a, and they go for it on 2 fourth downs and convert one of them, a miraculous across the body throw from Patrick Mahomes, in which he hits Tyreek Hill cutting across the field that puts the ball deep in Raven territory. We touched upon the Mahomes no look pass earlier on in the game. A great win for Kansas City, a tough loss for Baltimore.
I still think Lamar Jackson is going to be an NFL quarterback, Moose, and be a, you know, a good one. Not a great one, but a good one. But am I glad that I'm not a Raven fan, at least right now, having to watch him game in and game out every single snap? Because I don't know how much of this game you were to watch yesterday, but I watched a good chunk of it. And he makes nice throws. He makes good throws, but they lack like a certain vigor or something about them. Like, they just seem to float, and even his arm motion seems to be at like 75%. He's not like winding up and firing it. Like, there's a weird lack of urgency to his throws, both in the air and his arm, that I feel like everyone coming out is not going to get to where it wants to go. It gets to where it wants to go, but it gives me a heart attack every time he throws it. Their sidearm, the little flicks. I that was a game that I didn't. We mentioned this game on Friday. I thought at some point the Chiefs would drop the Ravens, and they never did.
They never did.
And Baltimore could have won that game in regulation. Couldn't make a stop, as you said. But so kudos to them for hanging and proving that they might be better than we thought. But again, they lose another close game, keeping themselves behind the Steelers and in that crowded AFC playoff picture.
The Colts snapped the Texans' 9-game winning streak, beat them 24-21 as they get their offense back going. Luck throws for nearly 400 yards and 2 touchdowns in the victory for Indianapolis. And the Texans were due to lose one of these weeks.
Yeah.
And a game, remember, earlier on in the season, where the Houston Texans benefited from Frank Reich going for it on 4th down. Remember this one in overtime in their own territory? Didn't get it. Put the Texans in field goal range. They end up winning it in overtime. That was one of the victories in that 9-game winning streak. Yesterday, you knew Indianapolis could play with Houston. Not only did they play with them, they beat them.
The Colts are sneaky good. And really, credit to the entire organization for a roster that was as least talented as any in the NFL, Moose. And in like a draft or two, they've really reshuffled things. Obviously, Andrew Luck's return to health is the number one thing, but he's got people around him. They got around Deshaun Watson yesterday. He didn't play well. And T.Y. Hilton, I didn't know this going in. He is the leading receiver in the history of that building.
Crazy.
In terms of yards per game, and he had 199. The only thing he didn't do is score a touchdown yesterday, but it's a really, really nice road win for the Colts. And like you said, to take nothing away from them, like, the Texans aren't good enough to have won. They're good, but to win a 10-game winning streak, 9-game winning streak, 8-game winning streak, all of those kind of exceeded just how talented they are. So one of these losses was coming. It came yesterday.
To Arlington we go next. How about the Cowboys with the 29-23 overtime victory over the Philadelphia Eagles? A game that was 9-6 at the end of 3 quarters. The Cowboys' way. You saw 31 points scored between the two teams in the 4th quarter. The Cowboys with the game-winning touchdown on a 3rd down play. With about 2.5 minutes left to go in overtime, deflected by the Eagles' defensive back into the hands of Amari Cooper. He jogs in 8 yards in for the touchdown as the Cowboys win it and have ultra command of the NFC East.
Moose, I remain fascinated with two-point try theories and strategy and numbers and analytics and probability. I love the fact that people were having a real debate as the Eagles were driving late in the 4th quarter. And even on TV, going for two and going for the win with under 2 to play in Dallas. Now, Doug Peterson didn't do that. Then it's Garrett gambling in overtime to extend that drive that accidentally kind of leads to Cooper's touchdown to win. I like forward thinking. Even if it doesn't happen, the fact that it was on the table that Doug Peterson could have gone for two to try and win that game late, that's to me That's making football fun these days, a new wrinkle to the conversation.
And then we get to the Miami Miracle.
Tannehill throws down the middle, caught by Stills, laterals back to Butler, or rather Parker, who flips it to Drake. He runs across the 40 of New England, angling inside to the 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. He's going to win the foot race to the end zone. The Dolphins are going to win it on the lateral. Once, then twice, and Drake takes it in, and the Patriots stand stunned in disbelief.
Four players, Tannehill, Stills, Parker, and Kenyon Drake. 69-yard touchdown as time expired. As the Miami Dolphins come back and stun the football world and stun Belichick and the Patriots with the Miami Miracle yesterday. Just unbelievable. Last player that could have stopped Kenyon Drake was Rob Gronkowski, who looked hobbled trying to run.
And the oh crap, oh shoot came from Scott Zolak.
Yes.
If this was flipped, if this was the Patriots scoring on a play like that, Zolak would have had middle fingers out the window, waving the Dolphin fans. I mean, that we've heard that guy lose his mind and be cocky and dismissive and condescending. But maybe I like the subdued "oh crap" because that's what everybody thought when Drake, you know, he's coming. He gets the lateral, he's going upfield, and he cuts middle, and you can see him. He's looking for the next pitch. And then he goes, you know what, I'm just going to turn right here.
And he turned finds right, that and it was scene, open field.
And that's when everyone goes, whoa. And that's exactly when Zolak came with, oh, shoot, and away he went, the way he went.
Yeah, that was Bob Soshi and Scott Zolak on the Patriots Radio Network.
Number three.
Kyler Murray wins the 2018 Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, right around 9 o'clock Eastern time on Saturday night, the Oklahoma quarterback wins it. And he had over 2,100 points amongst the Heisman voters. Tua ends up finishing second. Dwayne Haskins third. Those were your three finalists in NYC as the award got announced. I was surprised. You know, I couldn't really admit who I voted for before the vote. Those are against
Heisman
rules.
Wait, you have a vote?
I do have a vote.
Congrats.
Yes. Thanks for paying attention, Bogus. But I voted 2-1, Kyler Murray second, and then Haskins third. That's the way it played out for me. I thought Tua was the best player in America this year. Murray had 200 more snaps. He benefited from the games with Oklahoma being close because the defense is so bad. He played, in essence, three more games than Tua, not based just on injury, but also based on the fact that the Alabama team were routing teams left and right, and Nick Saban and got his starters out of the game. So I do think that provides Alabama extra motivation for the December 29th game against Oklahoma. And I was a little bit bothered, or a lot bothered, when that announcement got made.
I mean, I thought I was cool because I'd covered the Heisman, and it's kind of fun. Like, as they're announcing the winner on TV, you're sitting in the back room, and a door opens, and a bunch of people come out with the envelopes in their hand. They hand you a sealed envelope with the results in it. Yeah, and so you're like, oh, wow, now here's all that. There's all the breakdown. I thought I was cool. You're voting for the Heisman. Is this year one for you as a voter? How long
have
you been
voting? No, like 9-10 years.
Wow, look at Moose. I think they got it wrong. To some, you know, to piggyback off everything you said, I would have voted for Tua in a very, 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 very tough division and decision, I should say. But I think you have to. It's almost like they reversed our logic. I think Tua would have done what Kyler Murray did if he was Kyler Murray, and to punish Tua for being on a better team and against stiffer competition, taking care of it to the extent where he didn't have to make the plays that Kyler Murray did, is not a negative on Tua. It's a positive.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be that way, but the way he played helped them get in those positions where he had all he had to do was either hand off or stand on the sideline in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, totally agree. I totally agree. But Murray, and I'm not saying that he's not deserving.
No, Tua was just better in our mind. That's it.
That's really what it comes down to. We're going to talk to Sean Landetta, longtime NFL punter. He's going to join us next. It is Taz and the Moose, Bogus sitting in for the vacationing Taz. It's a Monday morning, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
Sean Landetta will join us here in a few minutes. We'll run around the National Football League with the longtime former NFL punter. Bogish has got another update. Take it away, Andrew.
Moose, this update is brought to you by Cremo Shaving Cream. Get a close shave while fighting razor burn and skin irritation with impossibly slick Cremo Shave Cream. Follow Cremo Company on Instagram for tips and giveaways. The LA Rams' high-powered offense never found the end zone. Shut out altogether in the second half last night in Chicago. Short and sweet from running back Todd Gurley.
I look like a skunk. That's what I look like. It was just one of them games, man. You know. we all were sorry today.
Only 14 touches for Gurley, 11 carries, a season-low 28 yards. His QB, Jared Goff, picked off four times, sacked three times, once for a safety, which broke a 6-6 tie in the third quarter. Bears QB, Mitch Trubisky, not much better, three INTs in his return from a shoulder injury, but Trubisky did throw a two-yard score to reserve old lineman Bradley Soule for the game's final points, the Bears winning 15-6. Inching closer to their first division title since 2010. The Cowboys, almost champs in the NFC East.
And Prescott in the gun. They look like they're going to blitz. Here comes everybody. Slant in the direction. Cooper caught it on the bounce. Off the defender. Cooper walks into the end zone. Touchdown, Cooper. Cowboys win.
Brad Sham, Cowboys Radio. Amari Cooper's third TD catch of the game. Got Dallas past Philly 29-23 in overtime. The boys now have a two-game lead in the division. Not to be outdone, the Dolphins stun the Patriots 34-33 on a 69-yard touchdown in the game's final play. Kenyon Drake running the final 52 yards for the points. The Texans' nine-game winning streak ended 24-21 to the Colts, and the Broncos' three-game run ending 20-14 to the Niners. San Francisco tight end George Kittle, seven catches, 210 yards, including an 85-yard touchdown. Kittle finishing 4 yards shy of the single-game tight end record. A college football note, Auburn hiring Memphis offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham for the same position, but head coach Gus Malzahn will call plays. From the NBA, the Lakers reportedly talking with the Suns about trading for veteran forward Trevor Ariza. The two teams looking for a third team to take Kentavious Caldwell-Pope from L.A. On the court yesterday, Milwaukee won in Toronto 104-99 with Giannis posting 19 points and 19 boards. The Spurs beat the Jazz 110-97. And the Hornets, a 119-107 W at the Knicks. College hoops, top-ranked Gonzaga went down to number 7 Tennessee, 76-73. Number 6 Nevada topped Grand Canyon, 74-66. Both of those games in Phoenix. And the Baseball Hall of Fame's Today's Game Era Committee sending closer Lee Smith and longtime DH Harold Baines.
Harold Baines, only three 100 RBI seasons.
22 years, less than 3,000 hits. And here's why I hate arguing over awards, because you end up breaking a guy apart and pulling him down. Harold Baines is not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, sorry. Don't disagree.
Back to you, Moose.
Yeah, you got it. Thank you, Andrew. Let's welcome aboard right now Sean Landetta, 22-year NFL veteran, joins us now. As good of a punter as you'll ever see, and he should be a Hall of Famer one day in Canton, Ohio. Hey, Sean, Andrew Bogish, Mark Melusis, thanks for a couple minutes this morning, bud. How you doing?
Very good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you got it, Sean. As good of a day as we've seen in the NFL all season, what we all witnessed yesterday.
You know, I agree with you. I mean, I'm watching these games, and I'm saying to myself, I hope football fans realize just how great and how good these guys played, how precise they are, how exciting these games are. So many of them go right down to the wire, and, I think you're seeing football played at the best level it's ever been.
Sean, not to pull it apart, though, but there's still a lot of bad officiating and a lot of bad, technical decisions by teams, by coaches, not using timeouts, burning timeouts, silly challenges. Some of the things I'm still surprised that teams don't have a better handle on by now.
No, you can make a point for that, a case for that. I think one thing the competition committee really should look at is giving teams maybe one challenge a half to challenge a call. Because no one wants a call to be a game to be decided on a bad call. And a lot of these plays happen so quickly, but we have the luxury of seeing the slow motion replay. And, teams should be given the chance to challenge a call that could really affect the game. And we see it every week. And, as far as other decisions that are made, yes. I mean, I agree with you. Sometimes, they have so many guys in their ear and they only have a few seconds to make a decision. And, in the end, some of these decisions they're making, right, when they look back, really they would take it back if they could.
All right, Sean, some interesting, number one is, you know, what issue did you have with what the Patriots did defensively at the end of that game where the Dolphins had the 69-yard flea flicker for a touchdown yesterday? What did the Patriots do wrong on that play?
Well, obviously, there were so many things that happened on that play, but the one thing that stood out to me, and I'm sure Bill Belichick will go over this because we all know what a great coach he is. You talk about having Gronkowski back there. Obviously, you want a tall guy to knock down the Hail Mary, but you say to yourself, where they were on the field, they weren't going to throw that ball in the air into the end zone. I mean, if you put nine guys back on the 10-yard line and let them catch it in front of you, they probably wouldn't score. Now, I know this is after the fact, and that almost never happens, but I think he'll look at that again and say to himself, if I'm against a team where they can't put the ball in the air in the end zone, I don't need to have that 6'7" tight end back there. I need to have a professional tackler, a defensive back, a linebacker, or even a defensive end.
Sean, the Dolphins said they practice that play basically every week. I'm sure you guys practice something regularly with the Giants, a fake punt or something like that. When you're running through such a strange play that you know you may never actually need, are you practicing it like at full speed, thinking it's going to work? I mean, what on a Tuesday or well, not a Tuesday, on a Thursday or Friday, you're doing a weird play like that. Are you really intent on perfecting it in case you need it?
You know, that's a great question because you probably can visualize a team practicing that and guys may be laughing as they're doing it and having fun because of all the laterals and craziness. But that's where the coaching is so important. The coach has to get across to these guys, look, this may happen and we can't have this play work in a game if in practice you're throwing it and lateraling it and laughing and thinking it's just something that won't happen. So the coaches really have to bear down and say, look, you know, even though this is a gadget play, you have to run this play thinking you can make it work. And after that, you have to get lucky. I mean, I'm sure that play will be broken down, and a lot of us will see things that if one guy on New England would have made one little different move, it wouldn't have worked. But what an exciting finish, and that's one of the great things about football, just the fact that that thing can happen.
Sean, after winning six in a row, the Steelers have lost three in a row now after a brutal loss yesterday in Oakland against the Raiders. Andrew and I talked about it earlier on. Can you explain the rationale for Tomlin keeping Roethlisberger out of the game when he returned to the sideline about 8.5 minutes to go in the third quarter and was medically cleared to play?
You know, I can't. I'm sure he was asked about it and will be asked about it again because obviously you would think you would want him in there because he would give you the best chance to win. I don't know why he wouldn't be put back in as soon as he was cleared to play, and as you said, he was. I don't know if they wanted to give him a breather or maybe, you know, let him clear himself, clear his head a little bit. I don't know, but that certainly hurt him, and you're right. For the Steelers battling for a division title, and they still may win it. I mean, as bad as things have been, I think they're still in first place in that division. But, you know, that was a terrible loss to a 2-10 team.
Sean, where's your confidence level now in this Cowboy team? 5 straight wins, obviously different with Cooper on the offense. They, you know, through 3.5 quarters, more great defense yesterday. How close are they maybe to the elite teams in the NFC in your mind right now?
I think they're close. I don't think they're one of them. You know, I certainly think even though they beat New Orleans, and you got to give them all the credit for that, you know, I still think the Rams, you know, and the Saints are the class of that. And I do think the Bears are a better team. But, you know, out of 16 teams in the NFC, you know, this is a top 5 team, maybe 4. And you have to give them credit. They were left for dead. I believe they were 3-5, talking about their coach getting fired. And as you said, all of a sudden they're in a great position to win the NFC East. And, you know, it's amazing what the acquisition of Amari Cooper has done for them.
Yeah, it really has opened. It has opened everything up, and that was a hell of a win for Dallas. But I think you saw a lot of heart and fight from the defending champs yesterday in Philadelphia.
Oh, you did. You did. I mean, as it's in overtime, you know, I played 5 years for the Eagles and enjoyed my time there, and certainly I was rooting for them. But I said to myself, either way, what a great game, and how great that the Eagles are down there you know, really fighting and having a chance to win this game. I mean, they played their hearts out, but just not quite enough. And, you know, just another thing that happens the year after a Super Bowl. You know, last year they make the extra point, and maybe it doesn't go to overtime. But they did fight their hearts out. They really played hard.
Sean, did you ever think going into last night that the Rams would only score 6 points?
You know, I wouldn't. I was very surprised by that. I mean, I know the Bears, you know, have a terrific team, and obviously their defense is outstanding. But the way they've scored points, you certainly thought they'd at least put up 10-14 at the minimum. But we saw this happen with the Saints at Dallas. Very similar thing. You know, but give the Bears credit. They bounced back for, you know, a very tough loss at the Giants the week before. And, you know, they're probably going to win that division. And, you know, that was good. Now it comes down to, you know, if they make the playoffs, which I think they will they be able to win on the road?
Yeah, and that's going to be key. We're talking to Sean Landetta, 22-year NFL veteran, joining Mark Melusis and Andrew Bogus here on this Monday morning on CBS Sports Radio. Sean, the NFL, you look at the young stars in this league and guys that do it just a little bit differently. And in Kansas City, Mahomes, the ability to make all the throws, what he is as an athlete, the style in which he plays the quarterback position, he's as I think you make the argument right now, you know, he's probably the most physically gifted quarterback at this position. You agree?
You know, I think I do agree. I think a few of the others that, you know, we've all seen that are amazing and have done it for years. But when you talk about how young he is and what he's done in his short career, you can really make that case. You know, he's mobile, his throws on the run, against the grain. You know, every week it seems like he does something that all of us say, wow. And this isn't an 8-year veteran who's 30 years old. You know, this is a youngster in his second year. And, boy, the Chiefs are really lucky. If this kid's healthy, they're going to be competitors. They're going to be in it for a long time.
Yeah, they are. And what about the performance of Saquon Barkley for the Giants?
You know, that the guy's just such a great player. I mean, every week you watch him, almost no matter what the team does, you know, the fans, and you say to yourself, what a player. And, you know, again, you know, I'm watching him play yesterday, and I'm saying to myself, you know, do the Giants have another Barry Sanders on their hands? I mean, could this guy be, you know, close to him? And certainly at this point you can say yes. I mean, obviously he's got to do a lot to do what Barry did. But for him to be this young and this good, you know, the Giants really are in good shape for a long time. You know, it's probably been since Tiki Barber, going back 12 years, that they had a consistent 1,000-yard rusher. And this kid fits the bill, and he's exceptional. It's turned out to be one of the best picks they've ever made.
Wait, I got to go back to Mahomes here just for a second, Sean. Are you saying that Phil Simms didn't have a no-look pass in his repertoire back in the 80s?
You know, Phil could do some different things. He was a real good athlete. We send him out, you know, on pass plays, you know, after he'd throw to a receiver. But, you know, Phil, I think, was an underrated quarterback. You know, in 1984, he goes for over 4,000 yards, which really put him on the map. But, you know, Phil was excellent, had a great career, but certainly the things this young man can do are exceptional.
You know, Sean, this year, and I wanted to ask you a question in terms of, you know, the you know, punting and kicking. We've seen such a turnover this year, as we've seen young kickers come in, get cut, then get other opportunities, as we've seen with other organizations. We saw Boswell yesterday for the Steelers, had a rough day with the turf conditions. How difficult is it when you get to the later stages of the NFL year where the turf is chewed up and you're a kicker trying to make sure that you have the proper footing to do what you're paid to do?
You know, it is tough, and I think that's where experience comes in. I know numerous times the fields today are so exceptional, and you'll almost never see a field in the terrible shape Oakland's was later. But I don't know how many times through the years where I'd go to punt where, you know, the field was loose underneath me, and you almost had to walk into the punt because if you exploded like you normally do, you would have happened what happened to him. And I don't know if that's something he took into account, that maybe he needs to approach the ball slower, because there's a tremendous amount of force when you plant your left foot and the field underneath you is loose. That can happen, but you got to know that can happen. And, you know, I'm not sure he took that into account. But yeah, the place kicking has been very interesting the last year or two, guys. The average career for a kicker in the NFL is 7 years. It's the longest of any position. And there's a number of teams that have been through 3, 4, 5 kickers just in 2 or 3 years. You know, really interesting what's going on at that position.
Sean Landetta, 22-year NFL vet. Hey, Sean, we appreciate the time this morning, getting your thoughts on all the great action yesterday in Week 14 of the NFL, and we'll chat again soon. All right, bud?
Thanks so much, guys. Have a great week.
Thanks,
you got
Sean.
It. You as well. Enjoy your Monday. And it is fascinating when you look at it. When they move the extra point back, and certainly with the length of some of these kicks that you're seeing now, I mean, kickers are obviously bigger, faster, stronger. The legs are stronger. And they're able to hit like 60, 62, 63 yarders. You know, something 20 years ago, you would say, oh, it's never going to happen. Now you're seeing it more and more. However, the accuracy, especially young kickers, when they're trying to establish themselves in pressurized situations.
And you just have no, you have no, almost no margin for error. I mean, yesterday,
none.
You know, Bozzo makes the early mistake, and then really, it's not the way the game ended is not his fault. I mean, I don't know if there's technically something that Sean was just kind of going through. He should have done something better.
He said he should approach the ball, approach with a plant foot with not the same explosion. Just make sure you get the kick up.
So, I mean, I guess if you can call him on that. But, I mean, it's just, you know, he's after the game, he's being asked, like, do you think you're going to get cut tomorrow? No other position in NFL. And say what you want about how kickers fit into the game and whether they're, you know, kicking is stupid or whatever it is. Nobody else plays a game, makes a mistake, and then stands in the locker room and has to answer the question of, do you think you're going to get cut tomorrow?
You're right about that. You're right. And it was yesterday, you could look at him as being one of the reasons why they lost, but he was not the reason. The reason was Mike Tomlin. Clock management and not putting Roethlisberger back in the game earlier in the second half than he did. We come back. We got the undercard for you next. It's a Monday morning. Taz, Moose, Bogish in the house, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes. You could save 15% or more on car insurance. Out to Topeka, Kansas we go. It's Sean at CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Sean?
Hey, guys. Great to hear you. Love hearing Mr. Bogish over the holidays. Big fan of Andrews over the years.
Thank you.
Just off your last segment, the Kansas City Chiefs in 2009 drafted Ryan Succop with the last pick in the draft, Mr. Irrelevant, and he is gone now. He just passed 1,000 points for his career Thursday, having gone a full decade of averaging over 100 points and still going. Does this make Ryan Succop the most valuable Mr. Irrelevant in NFL history? Great show, guys.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate that. We'd have to have our research team, Mike, take a look back at Sean. That's the last time you'll be allowed on the airwaves from Mike.
Was that Ryan Succop?
I think it was. Time right now. It's our, certainly one of the most valuable. I got to look at it. Well, no one's going to be more valuable in terms of points scored, right?
I mean, I guess.
I don't know. I got to look into that. It's time now to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question is from Billy down in Charlotte. Which Vikings team will we see tonight? Don't forget, you can submit a question by going to cbssportsradio.com/askthepros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every single day. And Viking fans are realizing what Redskin fans realized for a while is that Kirk Cousins is good. He's just not great. And we've seen him struggle and in big time spots this year for Minnesota. I think it's a tough spot for the Vikings going into Seattle tonight against the Seahawks. Wilson has been great in these games. We've mentioned it time and time again. Pete Carroll should be up for Coach of the Year. The job that he's done this year with the Seattle Seahawks,
yep.
They've gotten a little bit healthier. Andrew, they've gotten back to what Seahawk football is about, which is running it and playing solid defense and having Wilson at times being the magician that he is at the quarterback spot, finding guys wide open down the field. I don't know. I just don't the best way I could describe Minnesota this year is I have little to no trust in the Vikings.
No, and it's time almost to give up. We had this conversation maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, like waiting for them to flip the switch. Well, here we are now, almost the middle of December. It's week 14. Like, you should have done it by now. And the place to do it is not in Seattle. I also don't know if this is a trend, if this is actually something you can hold against him, but Cousins' numbers in primetime are terrible.
Terrible.
And I don't know what that means, if anything, but it keeps happening.
It does. And I think that is big moments, big games.
I guess, and the theory being it's primetime, so it's a better opponent than you may have on a random Sunday.
Bigger spotlight.
But the conversation is similar to like Cam Newton and other guys right now. They're just, for whatever reason, and there's different reasons, they're just not making the play or two that their team needs when they're slumping. Cousins hasn't done it, and Cam hasn't done it, and others haven't done it.
And DeFilippo has not done a great job as offensive coordinator either. So I like Seattle tonight. You?
Yes.
You like
Seattle?
No doubt.
I think
as well.
I picked them on Friday, actually.
I think you did. Let's get to it, the undercard.
Taz and the Moose present the undercard. The stories from today's rundown that we haven't talked about on the show.
All right, Mike, we hit a lot. What didn't we touch upon?
Well, there's actually a lot of literature on Mr. Irrelevant for those interested in it can go Google. But a lot of different articles have different opinions on it. The Ravens, Dolphins, and Colts and Tennessee all sit at 7-6. The Ravens, the final spot in the playoffs. Of those four, who do you think would be the most dangerous once in the tournament?
I'd probably lean towards Baltimore just because of what they can do on defense.
I'd take luck in the Colts.
Okay.
I'd take luck in the Colts because of what he can do offensively and the fact that the line is protecting him. As long as Hilton's healthy on the field, I'd take Indianapolis. I don't disagree with you about Baltimore. I just need to see a little bit more from the quarterback position than you're seeing right now. Flacco wasn't healthy enough to serve as the backup yesterday in Kansas City for the Ravens, but I can understand why you'd take Baltimore. It's a good question, but I would one of those two teams, but I would probably lead luck in the Colts. Next.
How disappointing were the Broncos yesterday falling to the 49ers 20-14?
That's a brutal loss. And I think I brought them down. I have not been good with my NFL picks this year, and I picked the Broncos on the road in San Francisco against the 49ers. I thought they had found something, lost 1-3 in a row, dismantled the Bengals on the road the week previous. Now they go on the road in San Francisco. And how about the tight end, George Kittle, who's been a fantasy stud all season long, over 200 yards receiving and a touchdown yesterday for the San Francisco 49ers. He was absolutely fantastic, the former Iowa Hawkeye, as the 49ers win the game outright. That is a terrible loss for Denver.
You want to take the blame for their demise. I thought I was going to have to because I was the one that floated the idea of their schedule starting with Sunday in San Francisco, home for Cleveland, and then at Oakland. A chance to have won, you know, 6 in a row or 5 out of 6, which I guess is still mathematically on the table, but it came crashing down in San Francisco yesterday. An emotional win for the Niners. Jed York's brother passed away during the week. I was watching this morning in the postgame locker room. Kyle Shanahan against the team his dad coached, a team that didn't hire him as head coach when they took Vance Joseph. So a lot of things came together and worked against the Broncos' favor.
Next.
What do you make of Taysom Hill and the job he's done for the Saints and that huge block changing the momentum and helping New Orleans clinch the division?
He does everything for the Saints, does he not? If they need a big third and short conversion, he converts it. They need to flip the script, the momentum of the game. He does it. Peyton loves him.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think they use him a little bit too much, but he was a big reason why the Saints went on the road yesterday in Tampa.
I still think it's crazy anytime Drew Brees is not the quarterback for the Saints. But, yeah, they've found a sweet spot, multiple sweet spots, where he just keeps doing something different every week to help them win.
The Segler just told me we are done.
Are we?
And the music's rolling. So, yes, we are done. Mike, great job.
No.
Pete, fantastic. Andrew, really enjoyed the last 3 hours.
Moose, thank you, sir.
You got our thanks to Sean Landetta for joining us earlier on this hour. You guys did a great job on the phones, on social media as well. Download that podcast, radio.com, Apple Podcast. Peace, we out.
There's got to be a 10-second runoff here. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.